Adam Sweet, stop saying all the bloody time. And Chris Proctor, please, please, please try not to sound like Shrek on sedatives. I've no idea what Shrek sounds like, but obviously really sexy. So
now that's Adam.
Yeah.
That there, ladies and gentlemen, is the brown note. Ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, welcome to episode 5 of season 5 of Lug Radio. To the right is my good friend...
Stuart Langridge.
And to the right of him is...
Adam Sweet.
And to the right of him is...
Chris Proctor. And to the right of me is you.
Thank you, I'm Jono Bacon. On the show tonight, we're talking to Havoc Pennington and Colin Walters from Red Hat about the GNOME Online desktop.
Ironically enough, we're going to talk about whether you need Rockstar programmers in projects.
And in this week's episode of El Bizarro's Oblique Freak Show, we talk about
Second Life.
my brain is just empty. Carry on, Chris.
And the thing we've got helps us decide another pressing issue in open source.
It certainly does. And of course, we've got plenty of emails to get through. We've had some fantastic emails in this episode.
We really have. So thank you. Welcome to episode 5, season 5.
So shall we crank out the brown note and roll on?
Let's crank out the brown note.
Okay, on the show right now we've got Havoc Pennington and Colin Walters from Red Hat, and they're on here to talk about the online desktop. How are you doing, guys?
Good. Good.
Excellent stuff. So, first of all, there's been a lot of discussion about the online desktop, so just give us an overview of what it's intended to achieve.
Right. Well, it keeps getting broader, but, you know, the short line that we tried to come up with is that it's a perfect window to the internet, just recognizing that the internet and, you know, all the different apps on there, whether it's IM or web browsing or anything else, are the main thing that a lot of people, not everyone, but a lot of people are doing with their computers.
Right.
And especially on, I don't know if there seems to be this sort of proliferation of new kinds of device, you know, whether it's, you know, the Nokia internet tablet, or the this thing called the Zonbu, or the various types of mobile platform, and we're interested in, you know, or this thing called the EPC that Colin blogged about today.
Yeah.
And it seems like especially on those devices, they're very internet centric. And they're all doing kind of really. They're doing all kinds of different things for their platform, so you know, we're exploring, definitely interested in those kinds of devices.
Yeah, the short answer I would give is basically just that, you know, a lot more of how people work has just been shifting online. Webmail has just been a trend that's just completely increased in the last couple of years, but there are new entrants in the field like Google Documents and a number of other online office apps, and just kind of like, it's also a recognition of the fact that people are just using their computer primarily for entirely new kinds of applications like eBay or Facebook, instead of kind of using it, looking at the computer as just like a sort of office. You know, the entire desktop was modeled around the sort of office worker model, but we're kind of trying to shift that more to how people are actually using their computer online.
So is the intention here to essentially better integrate online applications such as this into the desktop, or are you looking to primarily move the entire desktop over to the web replace fat clients?
We're not trying to move the entire desktop over to the web. We're not trying to do, I mean, there are things that are called web tops. We're not trying to kind of, because there really isn't much of a point to that for the most part, I feel. It's more better integrating the existing desktop with online services.
Right.
Okay. I mean, I've played a bit with the online desktop stuff, and I've got a mugshot account and all this kind of thing. It seems to me there's a lot of big plans for this. The end goal is kind of, you know, GNOME is brilliantly integrated with online resources all over the place and everything, and that's great. But if you get it at the moment, Big Board, is it still called Big Board, the panel down the side?
Yeah, I've sort of tried to brand that slightly.
Sorry,
it was sort of an inside joke at the beginning, but I tried to keep it out of like the sort of what users would see. I just refer to it as a sidebar, but yeah.
Okay, right, I'll call it the sidebar. It's not called Big Board. It's a secret between you and me and our 25,000 listeners. Sorry about that. That aside, I mean, that seems to be a useful way of keeping track of what your friends are doing online. But there seems to be this big kind of yawning gulf in between that and everything being really integrated. It doesn't feel like there's any kind of very clear picture about how to get there. I'm not sure I have a question so much as tell us how you're going to get from where you are now to where you want to be. Or is it just a case of keep experimenting and see what comes about?
Right. Well, I mean, one thing I would say is that there's, you know, at Red Hat, there's only a small number of people working on this, right? So a lot of this depends on what other people decide to do, right? Mm-hmm. So I just wrote in an article for Red Hat Magazine, and one of the things I said right at the front is that there's several different kind of elements to this. I mean, first is just kind of, you know, the big idea, right? Like, what if we really designed the desktop for sort of the modern world, which is something that, you know, Microsoft and even Apple haven't done yet. And that just creates a huge number of ideas. Second, specific user interface ideas that might fit in with that. And there, you know, we've tried what we can do, or, you know, just a few different things with a few people, like the sidebar, but something unrelated to that is the Firefox Journal that you might have seen Brian or Colin blogging about, or, you know, the Mugshot Stacker application is just a separate application, a third application that we've played around with. But, I mean, obviously the scope of this is just as big as GNOME itself, and there's, you know, like, many, you know, people can do things with photo applications, you know, with Tomboy, you know, with whatever it is, and, you know, just an enormous scope. So, you know, we've just, you know, as a few people, we can just poke at that. And the third thing I mentioned in the article is that there's a set of platform components to be worked on. So, you know, a couple of examples. One is, you know, we've been looking at empathy, and, you know, how we can share, like, the API for, you know, storing your people and keeping track of who you know on Facebook and IM and everything else. So, you know, there might be a platform component there. Or a really simple one is just that, you know, on other platforms, applications have access to an HTTP library that shares sort of state with the browser, like cookies for what sites you're logged into. Mm-hmm. That makes it a lot easier for the app to make calls to some website that you might use. And so a really simple platform component would just be that, an HTTP library that shares state with the browser. So,
very cool.
So, you know, three things. I mean, there's kind of this big idea of how the open source desktop could be better than proprietary alternatives. Secondly, you know, just specific UI ideas, specific apps, you know, whether it's a sidebar or integrating a photo app with online photo apps. And then third are platform components that underlie that. And, you know, obviously that whole list is so huge that, you know, it's going to take a while to get there, right? You know, it's no different than many other huge projects that open source has accomplished.
Yeah,
sure. I'd like to take a little step back, actually, and you've just preempted me a little bit, and I'm sorry if I missed what you said, but... I believe Fedora 8, as we know, have just come out about, I don't know, maybe a week or so ago, a couple of days ago, and there are packages available for Fedora which contain the online desktop components. So I guess as it's a new release, not that many people have played with it yet. So I wonder if you could just tell us how the thing, the online desktop part, hangs together technically. I know Mugshot's involved, and there are some packages for the desktop. But
what's the infrastructure?
Yeah, I just wondered if you could tell us how it hangs together.
You from a package point of view, kind of like, or just like a overall technology point of view.
Yeah. Yeah. Sorry. For both both the packages and also what the infrastructure is behind it, how it's all glued together.
Okay. Well, I mean, from the high level, there's a server and a client component actually. And the server kind of has two components. There's a mugshot.org, which was our original work, and then when we started prototyping out the online desktop work, it was really convenient to kind of reuse some of that server infrastructure. Mm-hmm. So that's online.gnome.org. So there's kind of the two server components, and that, and then there's the client side, which right now, in kind of the same way that we reuse the server, we also reuse the our communication between the two is via Jabber XMPP.
Okay.
And the mugshot process right now is what talks to the server. And that's in the mugshot package. So, for example, the synchronization of your gconf, your desktop preferences, happens through that program.
Right.
Then there's the big board package, which is the sidebar.
Yeah.
And then there's the online desktop, which is kind of the modified GNOME session, which starts the sidebar. And we also have a couple other components that we prototyped out there. In there, one being a system which synchronizes passwords from Firefox, so that if you log into Gmail, the rest of the desktop can make use of that, and other things like a Google Gadgets XML parser, and there's a number of various things in there. One thing I actually want to do with that package is kind of push it into GNOME as like a kind of general online Python library that, you know, anyone who just kind of wants to do any sort of random thing. For example, we'd like to have the sharing your cookies with the browser component in that too.
Yeah.
Okay. The first thing that comes to mind whenever anyone mentions online anything, essentially, well, two things. One, what happens when the network goes down? And two, isn't this just one huge security hole?
Well, okay, the first component to that, the network availability, we certainly don't want to just fall over if you kind of wander out of the range of your wireless.
No.
And right now the system's pretty good at that. I mean, we cache, you know, all the data that we download locally. So for the most part, that works fine. There's still some issues with initially starting up your computer if you're not online, but we've mostly hammered those out. And there's a pretty clear technical path for that, just in terms of caching things locally, that will work pretty well. As for security, we aren't really introducing anything I would consider... we aren't mixing any security domains together. I mean, security is obviously a big topic, but unless there's something specific, I don't see us as really changing anything from a security point of view. For example, we aren't really pushing anything into the web browser right now. We're just taking data from it.
Yeah, right.
So there isn't really a potential for hostile sites to, you know, get more data than they could have somehow.
Right.
Okay.
And something I wanted to know was, there's been a lot of talk recently about KD4, and KD4 has really rejigged the way the KD desktop works, and they've produced a lot of additional chunks of infrastructure there as well. And apparently it's very, very good at starting clocks. The thing I find exciting about this is that obviously we all know that anything that Havok says is pure gospel in the eyes of the GNOME community, and it took someone like Havok to stand up and say this is a vision that I'd like to see, and obviously a lot of people have been involved. But is this really going to be the best direction for GNOME? I mean, do you believe that this is the new innovative, exciting vision that people are hankering for in GNOME that Project Topaz was hopefully going to produce, but has produced nothing?
Bacon there.
I don't know. I don't know. I mean, to me, a problem with Project Topaz, I don't know. I'm not sure exactly what I would define Project Topaz is, so maybe I shouldn't say that. I think for any direction, there's already kind of some, let's have snazzier graphics, or, you know, let's fix the usability of, you know, whatever. Like, I mean, you can rework how applets work because, you know, they're kind of screwed up.
Mm.
And that stuff's worth doing. To me, it's not necessarily a direction because it doesn't answer the macro question of why is this going to be, you know, the most exciting thing that somebody that's not using Linux already, you know, why might they be interested in it? Do you know what I mean? Like I feel like a lot of prior thinking maybe didn't try to consider I don't know that question. you know what I mean? Like, how is it going to? How does it really? I don't know. Change the game, so to speak.
Yeah.
You know, if we sit here and try to have like snazzier graphics than Vista and OS X. I mean, you know, maybe our spinning cube is like slightly cooler than their Starfield or you know whatever.
Yeah.
But I don't feel like that's enough. Like I feel like we're gonna benefit more when there's I don't know. I just bust out the buzzword here. You know, if there's more of a paradigm shift.
Ding, 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 ding.
you know, I lose. But if you think about these, you know, whether it's the internet tablet and other kind of devices or just small PCs or you know, people moving from using Microsoft Office to using web apps. I mean, that's when you have where people are already expecting to have a big, you know, to maybe not have all the same features they had before. But you know they're getting something new that makes that worth it,
right?
And their expectations are kind of reset, and it's no longer like, wow, you know, how do we have the whole Microsoft Office feature matrix?
Yeah, yeah.
You know, like you want to get rid of that, and instead you want to say, you know, just you want to just talk about, you know, what you have that's kind of new and different. And
yeah.
So I mean, that's kind of the spirit, I think, of this kind of direction,
right?
And, you know, whether it'll be the direction, I don't know. I mean, I think it would be fantastic if we had, like, several directions like that. I mean, I would just love to see, you know, people proposing, you know, whether it's different devices or different kinds of UI or, you know, different pieces of functionality, you know, whatever it is, but just that really make a big difference in how people are using the computer.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Or it's just really clear that it's maybe a different thing.
Yeah.
That they would be switching to, or that they would be adding to their way they're using computers.
Absolutely. I mean, the other thing is, the last thing I was going to ask you before I pass you over to Ack is that one of the, a cynic, stepping into a cynic's boots for a second, this isn't necessarily my opinion, but a cynic could say, you know, Miguel started working on Mono and now seems to be asking a lot of people to use Mono, and these people are working on those projects, and now Havok's working on Mugshot, and Havok's trying to push the Mugshot agenda with the GNOME community. How would you defend yourself against those claims?
Well, I mean, I don't know. I guess I couldn't.
Colin, defend me.
Fight for him, Colin.
I don't know. I mean, what would be a Mugshot agenda? I mean, you know, I don't know. I don't see it as like us trying to do that. I mean, I see it just as a project to, you know, integrate better with what people are using. You know, a lot of people are using Gmail. We're just trying to integrate better with that. And so on. So, I don't know.
Yeah.
It would seem like a strange. I don't know.
You could just say they're full of crap. I mean, that would be an acceptable response.
Yeah, I think that's part of it. No, we one of the things that we are trying to solve though right now is that Mugshot, like the stacker, is kind of does appear in the online configuration because we're sort of reusing components and we're trying to separate that out better. But you know, those are small details. I think it's not. You know,
cool. So they're full of shit.
I don't think there's. I don't know what the hell the Mugshot agenda would be like.
Yeah.
Back the world. I don't know. Anyway, but the that is why we split. We're trying to make Mugshot just a website, like any other website that your desktop might integrate with. We're trying to make that totally separate,
yeah.
And then we're moving. We've been trying to move everything else over to be, you know, GNOME branded. You know, owned or controlled by the GNOME Foundation is appropriate.
Yeah,
you know, all that. And it's all open source as well. So we've really been trying to do all this sort of under the, you know, GNOME auspices and, you know, in a community way. And, you know, I don't know. I just don't know what the agenda would be.
A reasonable answer, I think. I mean, going back to something you said a couple of minutes ago, I've long thought that a good idea might be for the Linux desktop as a whole, for the free desktop as a whole, go after specific areas. Like, it'd be great to have a desktop for 14-year-old girls, which was really, really good at integrating with the stuff that they do. I mean, Mugshot, the GNOME Online desktop, is kind of biased towards the sorts of online services that you guys use, that we use, you know, so Flickr's in there and Gmail is in there and so on. How much effort is it to bring
Friendship
new services into it?
I mean, what would I have to do if I thought here's a handful of web services that I know, you know, my daughter uses a lot, that currently the GNOME Online Desktop doesn't talk to, and I want to make it. How much effort is it? What do I have to do to make that happen?
Well, a lot would just depend on the site and what you want to do. I mean, I know it's sort of an open-ended question. One of the things I guess we've been trying to do is just add some infrastructure so it's just easier to integrate with websites in whatever way that is needed. For example, getting usernames and passwords out so that to the desktop so that you can use those for APIs, so you don't have to do the whole login process again, or sharing cookies, that sort of thing. A lot would just depend on what the site would be. I mean, you know, we kind of have, you can just write another widget for the sidebar, I guess the thing is there's nothing stopping anyone right now from just sort of like having a component that would monitor a website and do notifications or, you know, whatever you want to do. We're trying to make it just easier to do that, I guess.
Sure.
In a lot of cases, it's really easy. It just depends.
Okay. you're just heading into something there that I wanted to ask you about. I noticed when I looked at the screenshots for Mugshot and Big Board and what have you, all of the services there were proprietary services, which is Gmail and MySpace. I might have imagined that one, actually.
You hate freedom, yeah.
Yeah. what else was there? There was Flickr and other kind of other web applications. I was just wondering whether you foresee that as being a problem, or are you just facilitating helping people use what they already use, in so much as, are you hoping that other people are going to start springing up with open source web applications that we can tie into?
Yeah, I mean, so just from my perspective, I think it is a problem. I guess what I would say is that it's kind of, it's a separable, it's a problem that we have to solve, regardless of online desktop.
Sure.
Maybe that's the way to put it.
Absolutely.
Realistically, people have a web browser. I think almost everyone listening to this, probably one of the first most common things they do in their web browser is go to google.com or whatever proprietary search engine they use and use it, right?
Yeah, sure.
So, you know, as an open source community, it's not in any way going to help us to say, well, you know, we're not going to use search engines, or we're going to pretend our users don't use search engines. Do you know what I mean? And the same for whatever else websites do. I think instead of that, it's just like for client-side software, I mean, the solution is to offer alternatives. There's kind of an additional complexity is that, in my opinion, to get sort of the benefits of free software with an online service, I think maybe there's more than just the licensing, because the open source definition and the GPL and whatever, all those things have to do with distribution. An online app isn't distributed.
Yeah.
Right.
You never receive a copy of the software. And so essentially open source licensing just doesn't matter. It has no effect. Like, say all the code running google.com was GPL, it absolutely could be. You still wouldn't have that code. Because the GPL says if they give you the code, they have to give you the source code. But they're not giving you the code.
Yeah.
Right?
The point is
GPL
moot.
Doesn't force them to actually distribute the code.
Hence the affluent GPL.
It's something that Louis Villo was interning here this summer, and he started on, and then he's continued just on his own time, is trying to figure out, like, you know, what do we need to say beyond the open source definition about what would make a website open? And there's already some takes on that, like, you know, Wikipedia kind of makes available their database for download, for example, that kind of thing. And so he has a lot of more work on that. It's a huge topic, but I just wanted to footnote that, you know, we might actually have to go beyond just saying, well, you have to run open source code on your server, and say other things like, we have to give people access to their data.
Yeah.
Cool.
Or, you know, whatever.
Yeah. Okay.
I guess what I would say overall on this is, like, I feel this is definitely the direction in which computing's going.
Yeah.
And it's hard for us to, Microsoft is also hit by this, right? I mean, you know, because they're so heavily invested in a rich client side. you know, they're really fighting against the trend. But I think, you know, I think it's a clear trend, and the GNOME Online Desktop Project, I think we would really like to integrate with if there were open services for something like Flickr equivalent. Mm-hmm. I mean, I think it would make sense to for us to integrate with that by to kind of advertise it by default.
Sure.
In a sense. And so that's one way, but I don't know. I feel like you. I mean, it's so easy to just offer to integrate with what people do use too.
Sure. Mm-hmm. Okay.
Yeah. Well, one other thing to add here is that there's kind of so say the open source community was going to compete with these things. One of the big problems we have to solve is just, well, you know, you need server infrastructure, mm-hmm. right?
Yes.
And you know, and it's like Wikipedia kind of has some server infrastructure. There was some other example I don't remember. You know, it's kind of been dealt with a little bit by some communities, but you know, just think about it. You know, what's the governance? You know, how do you fund something like that, et cetera? And so, one reason we set up online.gnome.org actually was to kind of create a situation where we could maybe try to figure it out.
Yeah, absolutely.
How could say the GNOME project have a server?
Cool.
That seems like some kind of first step.
Okay. Do you have a URL, by the way, just before we wrap up?
For the project as a whole, it's live.gnome.org/online-desktop. Isn't
cool.
that right? Yeah, that's right.
Okay, well, I'd like to thank you for coming along and talking to myself and my three fat friends. It's good to speak to you.
Thanks for having us. It was great to speak to you, too.
All right, take care, guys.
Cheers, guys.
Bye-bye.
Hi, my name is Miguel de Casa, and you're listening to Log Radio.
A week ago or so, Thomas Thurman Marnell, who's a Metasty hacker, wrote some stuff on his live journal, no less, in between painting his nails black and whatnot, listening to the Manic Street Preachers and harming himself. He wrote down...
telling everyone how different he is and how much it hurts.
Moving on from that a little bit.
Oh, why don't we have, for El Bizarro, we could talk about live journal users.
No, moving on. He wrote some stuff which I thought was interesting. He was talking about a Metacity problem that turned out not to be one, but and this is what he said anyway. He said, there's a bunch of sysadmins who administer various Anglican or Episcopalian things worldwide, including the Anglican.org domain, and they're known as the Society of Archbishop Justice. St. Justice of Canterbury, who died in 627 AD, was an extremely minor archbishop in the big scheme of things, but he kept the church running in his day. Similarly, sysadmins are doing their job best when no one knows who they are. And it's a little bit like that with the GNOME Foundation board elections currently. Federico Mena Quintero said, if you're a rockstar hacker, you'll not be a good board member. He goes on to talk about the Metasty problem itself. He says, for a while I was a bit put out by the idea that Metasty had succumbed to Jamie Zawinski's cascade of attention deficit teenagers model, the idea being that the Linux community only fix cool stuff and never actually fix any hard underlying bugs. He says, he was a bit put out by the idea that Metasty has succumbed to that model because... I don't think I've written much new code at all in the last year. All the spare time I've had, which has been squeezed a little in the last few months, has gone on bug fixing and patch review. But this is the thing we really need. We don't need rock stars. You won't get your name in lights and your own Wikipedia page saying JNQ Hacker is a rockstar programmer by fixing a ton of minor bugs and making the users happy, but really, in the final analysis, that's not the important thing. The important thing is to make the users happy and, as much as possible, not to let them know you're there. After all, one day you won't be.
Sage words.
I thought, that's quite wise, actually. We talked a long time ago, long-term Lug Radio listeners. Well, remember, we did a segment a while back called It's Important, But It's Not Interesting, about people who hacked on... Go on, Jono.
Paper sizes.
Thank you.
I didn't say anything.
Jono's paper sizes. Like,
may take the piss, but you've remembered it, haven't you?
I have remembered
it's
it.
It's like the Gorilla advert that everyone's talking about.
And lots of other stuff...
not a joke.
That needs to be hacked on, that is important, but it's not fun and interesting and it won't make you famous. And the point that Thurman puts across there is precisely that he explicitly doesn't want rock star programmers, and I wondered why you wouldn't
scrapers.
Want why you wouldn't want rock stars. I mean, rock stars, there's a lot of people who say rock stars are good, surely.
It's interesting, isn't it? I mean, we've just talked to a couple of rock star programmers. We've just talked to Havoc Pennington and Colin Walters.
To be fair, we talked to rock star programmers quite a lot, really.
Yeah, I mean it's
not just this episode.
I suppose it depends, because you could say that a lot of the rock stars in the open source community are people who have become known through their good work. And a lot of those people, I mean, look at Linus. I mean, Linus is a rock star. He's probably the biggest rock star, but he still writes. He still maintains the kernel. He still works on the kernel. And admittedly, he's not writing as much code as he used to, because he's managing all these patches, but he's still dealing with the day-to-day stuff of the kernel. He's not kind of become famous and then turn to a lifestyle of hookers and cocaine. You know, he's he's pretty much stuck to it. And so his notoriety, his reputation is because he's really good at what he's doing, and he's stuck to what he's doing. I suppose it's when people are taken away by the fame and they don't keep doing what they're doing. And that happens to a lot of people.
I don't know. I mean, I think certainly the open source community is still enough of a meritocracy that if you do some good stuff and then everyone thinks you're really good and then you crawl up your own arse and stop writing good code, people will turn away from
you. Yeah, absolutely.
I think so. It's not that people are turning away from what they do. I think Thurman's point there was not so much that he doesn't want rock stars because they'll end up spending too much time on the red carpet and not enough time hacking code. It's just that rock stars in general don't want to hack on low-level, boring, monotonous tasks. But there are loads of low-level, boring, monotonous tasks.
Problem with it being a meritocracy in general, isn't it? You only get recognition for doing cool stuff, essentially. You get recognition for writing kernels. You don't get recognition for fixing a really obscure bug in some obscure application that really helps people.
I have to say, in many respects, I called them dung scrapers earlier, which was a bit unfair, but I think what I was talking about is basically the people that are going around dealing with all the low level details and tidying up the edges and dealing with that kind of thing, and that's generally what I tend to do as a sysadmin again. But in most fields of endeavor that I pursue, I end up being the one that looks after the details and tidies up things and makes things actually workable rather than doing the grand sweeping statements. I think you won't get anywhere without the dung scrapers.
But the thing is, I think what's interesting is that a lot of the rock stars are still dung scrapers. You know, take for example, I mean, I can't believe we're comparing rock stars and dung scrapers.
I thought that was quite funny, that's why I threw it in.
So let's look at some examples. I mean, we've already used Linus. Another one could be Miguel de Caza. I mean, he's still hacking on significant chunks of Mono. You could look at.
Yeah, but his project is Mono. He's famous for being Mono. He's not famous for fixing smaller bugs.
The point here, I think, is that he's a famous person, but the reason why he's famous, that's the reason why a lot of other programmers are famous, is because they're good programmers, they're shit on. I mean, Havoc is the only reason why Havoc Pennington has got the reputation he's got is because he's shit hot at what he does.
He's
visionary and he can implement his vision, and that's the reason why he's so good. And he's still dung scraping, you know. I mean, there's a lot of dung scraping going on.
I mean there's a certain amount of not, I don't want to call it bias in what Thurman's saying, but Metacity is the very definition of a project which doesn't attract rockstar programmers purely because it's designed to be invisible. If you even know what Metacity is, the Metacity programmers have missed the goal. And to a large extent it should be that way. You know, I mean, other programmers who hack on the kernel aren't anywhere near as famous. Linus is famous because he's Linus, because he invented Linux, not because he continues to hack on
it. Well, look at Alan Cox. Hans Reiser, he's famous for a different reason. But
he's not doing the Reiser gags. Hans Reiser's not a kernel hacker.
No, but he writes a file system, which should also be invisible.
We're talking about... I don't agree with you, because the whole point of Reiser 4 is that if file systems were genuinely invisible, there'd be no difference between EXT3 and Reiser 4. The whole point about Reiser 4 is you have to say, it does this stuff that's different. I mean, I've talked in the past about an egoless desktop, which we have and the Parage people don't. Because we can just have an editor called Text Editor. We can have, programs that are just called a sound recorder or a music editor or whatever. You don't have to put a name on it, because it's not necessarily important that people know about the name of your program, because we don't necessarily need them to spend the upgrade revenues on it next time.
But what you've got to bear in mind, of course, is that we're using the word rockstar within a very, very small fishbowl.
Oh, of course.
And the biggest rockstar that we've got hacks on a fucking kernel.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, it's we're not talking Brad Pitt here. We're talking about people who are known in a very, very small technical circle. And part of the reason why they're famous is because of their ability. The question we want to get back to it regarding Thomas's post is, are these people impeding on a project if they get involved because of their visibility? I ask this question, one, because are they getting involved, you know, is it them and their notoriety, their fame inside that project? So everybody looks at them, everybody looks at the project that they're involved in, and the focus is taken away from the development work. Or is it because when you get to a certain level of fame, you basically don't want to deal with the bugs, you basically don't want to deal with the details? And I don't know if people who do get to that level of fame don't want to deal with the details, because I think there's significant examples where people who become very well known, I mean, I'd say which people have become well known and don't work on the details, you know? Looking at programmers. Yeah. I'm not looking at anything else, just programmers.
I don't believe we have a load of, quote, rock star, unquote, programmers who go and stop dealing with the detail.
Yeah.
I think we're quite good for that.
I don't think anyone says I'm not fixing a bug because I'm too good for it.
I'm too important to fix that kind of bug. I don't think that's the case at all. It's more the first one. I mean, to be honest with you, I think you need both. Yes, you need people to fix the low-level stuff, to do the daily grind. But if you don't have people in there with vision, then you never move forward. The problem is that vision's inherently a much cooler thing to do.
Yeah.
So more people want to do
it. But it's also something that fewer people can do. I don't think that many people have got the ability to have vision, which is part of the reason why you find people, these amazing people who can just say, this is the way it should work. And then the key people is people who say, this is the way it should work, and then they go in there and they make it happen. Reason why Havoc's got such a huge fan base, is the fact that he's a guy who
Look at Aaron Saigo, again, in the KDE project.
I mean, you know, these people have a vision and then they make it happen.
Rastaman for Enlightenment. He might be taking a long time to do it, but he had a clear vision and he's making it happen.
Some people have a vision, don't make it happen. There's...
Sorry, where I was heading with the dung scraper thing is I can see from Metacity purely, you can see straight away that rock stars are no use to them, because as you said, it's almost an invisible piece of software.
Yeah.
And you need people that are going to put hard work in. And but at the same time, for big pieces of software, you need the rock stars, otherwise nobody knows about it.
You see, I disagree, I disagree with that, because it's a window manager, and because it's something that's about lots and lots of little hacks and fixes, right? One of the biggest things that people are talking about right now today is compis, right?
Yeah, but I think they're wrong. That's the point. But compis ought to be invisible, and it's not. They've made it about the project, not about what
agree,
it can do.
I agree, but my point is that visibility of a project has no effect on the level of rock star.
It's not sexy, is it? You don't want to be pimping Metacity.
But again, the kernel isn't particularly sexy. I mean, the writing licenses isn't particularly sexy.
But you don't know anyone who does it, though.
But interestingly, if you look at the big famous people, they're involved in relatively uninteresting areas. But if you look at people who write games, and people who write multimedia applications, and people who write this kind of stuff, you don't ever hear about those people.
The thing is, the people...
It's completely opposite, if you think about it.
The people you're aiming at there are famous because they were the pioneers, which is Stallman, straight away. He wrote licenses.
When you say writing licenses, you actually meant Stallman. Name someone else who writes licenses.
Ibn Mughlin.
Again,
Ibn Mughlin was not the founder of the GPL.
He's
someone who has since subsequently come.
But he's not a programmer. He's not even remotely a programmer. He's a lawyer.
Yeah.
And he's famous because he's the only fucking lawyer in the free software community. Him and Bradley M. Coon, and that's it.
I think a lot of people...
I'm not even sure Bradley Coon's a lawyer.
A lot of people would disagree, but you're talking about he's the only famous lawyer in the free software community. Yeah, there are lots of lawyers.
There really aren't.
There's lots of...
There are other lawyers around.
There are other lawyers who have got an interest in free software. I think... But anyway, we digress. So my point here is that I don't think the thing that makes these people famous is because they're famous within a very small fishbowl, and they become famous because they're involved with a project that people care about. So people care about the kernel. That's why Linus got famous. People care about people cared about Emacs. That's the reason why Stallman became famous. You know, people care about GNOME. People care about KDE. That's the reason
Chris
why
Chris cares about Emacs.
You know,
nobody else does.
You know, people care about different things.
Okay, so then bottom line, if you're involved with a project, would you want rock star programmers or not?
Are we going round?
Yeah, go round,
Chris.
No, I don't think so. I think you want people who will do all of the stuff like writing documentation, like hacking on, you know, fixing obscure bugs and doing all that stuff. And rockstar programmers distract people from that. Everybody's going, I want to be like them because they're a rockstar, and not getting on with the stuff that really needs to.
Okay, Adam?
I think they have a place. I think Jeff Waugh admitted that he wasn't an exceptional programmer, and he was far better suited to being a rockstar, but highlighting things and pointing people's attention at things that needed looking at.
Yeah, I mean, from my perspective, looking at our own Jonathan Edward James Bacon, I think there is a genuinely valuable role in having someone with high visibility and lots of respect in the community involved with your project. Because if you've got a project which is good and it's solid and there aren't any bugs in it because you've got lots of people beavering away hard on it and everything, no one ever fucking uses it because no one hears about it. You just become another project on SourceForge. No, you've got to have someone out there doing publicity, getting people whipped up about it, because that's how you get new developers. It's how you get people interested.
I'd say that you need a combination of people who can get people excited about a project, but you need the good, solid foundation of good programming.
You get nowhere without people that are doing the hard work.
Yeah. Every project needs a variety of different disciplines, and I think the Rockstar thing is a good thing, so long as the Rockstars actually provide a direction. It's when people get up and generate hype without any hula. Work going on. That's that's my personal grievance. But
yeah.
This week on El Bizarro's Oblique Freak Show, we are talking about Second Life.
Fucking freaks.
Freaks.
Freaks. Don't like the Second Life then.
Well, I do like Second Life. I think it's, it's ingenious and it's very technologically sound and everything. It's just for weirdos.
Can I,
very clever.
Can I tell you about my Second Life story?
Go on then.
Do you have to?
The first time I heard about Second Life was when I was at Euro OSCON in Amsterdam. And I walked up to this projector screen with this 3D thing going on, and there was this guy stood next to me who was on the unusual side, right? And he basically told me how he owned a casino in Second Life, and he spent all day in Second Life, and he made money from this casino, which he could convert into real money.
Yep.
And he had people who worked for him in Second Life, and it was his business. And I was thinking, what the fuck is it?
You see, that to me, that's not weird.
It is. The guy lives in a virtual world.
But that's just the new world order. I can't see any reason why.
It's not weird at all.
It's
perfectly. It's a perfectly normal function of a regularly functioning social human being.
That's spotting the problem straight away for me. That is. Do these people? I'm talking about people who they're like fucking what. More than 8 hours a day. Do you not have a first life? Do you not have a real life?
It is clear and apparent to me that everyone's only got room for one life, which means if you've got a second life, you don't have a first life. And Neuro, I'm talking about you. But importantly, I mean, Freshfields, right? Huge law firm in the UK, have an office in Second Life.
Isn't that the supermarket in Coronation Street?
No. Well, it might be. But I mean, the thing I think's weird is not people who run a casino in Second Life, because I think, fine, it's a lot easier to build a casino in Second Life than it is in the real world, because land's cheaper, and you can generate as much more of it as you want to without having to build on the sea, which is fine. It's people who do weird stuff like the unicorn thing.
I've never been in or on Second Life, right? And I admit, it's just because I haven't found the time. I would like to have a look and see what the hell it's all about. But I know two things about Second Life. And the first one is what fucking Harry Potter showed us.
The unicorn.
People shagging a unicorn so they can get a little unicorn baby. And the other thing, so I was explaining this to my friend at work. I thought, well, how do they have sex? So I looked it up, right? And you have to buy your genitals in the Second Life, because the avatars don't come with genitals by default. You have to buy your genitals in Second Life, and there are stores in Second Life which will sell you genitals.
In order that you can go and be shagged by a unicorn in a virtual world. Now, that's weird, right?
I don't think the genitals are a prerequisite for the unicorn shagging.
Aren't they?
I've never said that before.
First person ever to say that.
Well, what I want to know then, if they're not a prerequisite, where does the unicorn go otherwise?
They just basically bump and grind.
My favourite Second Life story is there's apparently this little old woman who got into Second Life.
This is heading in the wrong direction.
No, it's not a grim story.
Is that a little old woman called Mum?
No, not okay. No. I heard about this sort of third or fourth hand or something. She went, and you know, you can create your own avatar and what it looks like. She created a little old lady avatar. And she was the only one, because all the other, you know, presumably there were other little old women in there, but they were all, you know, big, strapping fucking guys with swords and big muscles and stuff. And
gorgeous Valkyrie female warriors.
Exactly, with fucking legs up to their necks and all this. And she just went and designed herself to look like an old lady, because that's what she looks like. She was the only person in Second Life.
You know what? I would possibly kill or give lots of money or both to see a side-by-side comparison of the avatar and the person in real life.
I want to know what the fucking unicorn thinks he's doing as well.
The whole furry thing. How do people get turned on by furry things? I mean, that's bestiality. That's what that is. You know, that's wrong. If something's got udders, you don't feel attracted to it.
We had a chap on the forums who came in and said, you know, the otherkin thing. Well, I'm a furry. This is why. So you should chat to him and expand your sexual identity.
Yeah, I can milk him first. That's
and some people might say that, well, it's any port in a storm, really, wouldn't they?
That's a lovely term.
Anyway, back to Second Life.
Oh, so, God.
Well,
it's... I think the thing is when Second Life takes over real life. Like, yes. I played with Second Life. I registered an account mainly out of morbid curiosity, went in there, and I had the grand plan of becoming a pimp, right? Actually quite difficult to become a pimp in Second Life. And I went in there
Since when you go, right, okay, and start hitting the girls or trying to get them addicted to heroin or whatever, they just log off.
Well, you know, to be fair,
pimps are quite cruel, nasty people.
To be honest, I didn't try to be a pimp. I went in there. I obviously had long hair in my avatar, and went in there and I had
and a horn.
I was going to say I had a poke around, but that's not what I did. I had a look around, and it's intriguing. It's an intriguing technical thing, right? However, when people start using that as a replacement for their first life, that's when they become weird. And I imagine a lot of people just log in there for a couple of hours in the evening and have a poke around and they talk to some people and all the rest of it. It's when people spend all frickin' day in there and, you know, and you can be having a perfectly normal conversation with somebody and then an enormous penis will run past you and you're thinking...
Well, I mean, I'd like to take this in a slightly darker direction. I forget which website it was. It was either the BBC... or more likely it was the Register. I remember
two completely different qualities of news.
I remember I remember reading it, and it was on a white background, so it was one of the two, and those are two. anyway. But I remember there was, I don't know, 6 months ago or something, there was worries about kind of deviant sexual behavior in Second Life. I mean, this is pre-unicorn. There were
before unicorn.
People were getting worried about people were posing as underage girls.
Right.
And they were having, I don't know what exactly they were doing, but they were doing sexual role play with underage girls and very mature men. And that heads in two directions for me. Either A, that's a good thing because at least they're doing it in Second Life and not in real life. But isn't that just role-playing for...
Raises an interesting ethical question, doesn't it, as to whether... Yeah. Does the represent... If someone goes on there and represents themselves as a six-year-old girl and then they engage in sexual relations with, let's say, Adam Sweet, is that...
I'd prefer you didn't say that.
Is that something that... I mean, to me, that feels deeply uncomfortable.
It does. Yeah. But then again, it shouldn't actually be illegal. You're not actually doing anything wrong. I mean, it's
not all that different between 45-year-old women dressing up with pigtails in the porn
exactly.
world.
No, exactly. It's deeply wrong. And
it's weird.
I mean, I want to say it oughtn't to be allowed.
Yeah.
But then, I mean, your point about if you're going to do it on a screen in front of you has got to be better than the alternative.
That's the thing, is that it does... Do people acting out their fantasies on, you know, in an environment such as Second Life? Because this is probably the newest, this probably while we're facing these questions is because Second Life is the first huge 3D environment where people are starting to do this. People were doing it years ago on, you know, on IRC.
This is the first graphical.
The thing I think is interesting about Second Life, unlike, you know, World of Warcraft or EverQuest or whatever, is it doesn't have a point. The goal is not to complete the quest or kill the dragon or whatever. It's just
life.
You just go there and live.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think it's fascinating.
The whole thing descends into basically sex then.
It's what it seems. I mean, I've never been on Second Life, but this is basically the impression I get from the whole thing.
No, it's segregated. They have different. They have different, like different.
Okay,
worlds.
Yeah. There's the business part of it, which has a point, which is kind of.
Well, they have
business,
like mature and family areas, so it's all wealth segregated.
Okay. But you didn't go to the family area, did you?
I went to the family areas all the time.
But does anything interesting happen in any of the other any of the segments then?
I suppose it depends what you mean by interesting. People
do business.
Well, yeah, no, I kind of get
Oh, you mean
that,
just where people have a
where
chat?
Where people are kind of a...
But that's not people do not do genuine business. Oddballs do business with other oddballs.
I think I remember
They absolutely do. Plenty of people make a living out of doing stuff. It's no more weird than making a living selling stuff on eBay, which people do. I don't see what the difference is.
You don't see Second Life as any more weird than doing business on eBay.
No, I don't.
Not from a business point of view. If you have a business meeting and don't want to fly to the other side of the world to have it, then Second Life, I see absolutely no difference between
having an eBay store and having a Second Life store.
Well, I guess you're right.
If you want a shop, you want people to walk into it, fine. If you want to mediate it through the internet, it really doesn't matter whether the interface is 3D or 2D,
in my opinion. You see, this is interesting. Yeah. Not wanting to derail it too much, but my dad was, just as a side point, my dad was involved...
Being fucked by a unicorn.
Before my dad was fucked by Unicorn, never said that either. My dad, when, you know, sort of 10, 15 years ago, was involved in some of the early e-commerce websites on the internet, and he built one of the first websites for people to browse and buy cars online. And back then, it was very much about providing a shop front. It was very much about... Mm-hmm. Emulating the shop, and then people went away from that, and you had sites like eBay and just general websites. Yeah. And now we seem to be moving back towards that. If we're talking about Second Life, that's an interesting kind of about turn. So, but back to the freaks. Do we think round the crew again, Adam?
Right. Well,
freak or unique?
Well, pretty much freak. We've covered less of the actual non-freakish parts, and I think I really would like to take a look, and I just haven't had time to do it so far. But I think if you're spending more than I don't know, like 3 or 4 hours a day in there, you're a bit of a freak.
Freak?
I've never really had a look at Second Life, but every impression I get, every new story I get is just freak.
Okay, Hack, what do you think?
But that's because it's news. Every new story you get that isn't about Second Life is about freaks as well. I think Second Life's a great idea. I don't think it's full of freaks at all. I think there are weird people in it, but I think there are weird people in Wolverhampton as well. No one wants to shut that down.
Hello.
I think they should.
Second Life is great.
Okay.
Not freaks.
So what's your username? Is it Unicorn McElephant?
I can't actually remember. I logged into it, but you need 3D acceleration, which I don't have on my machine.
I think that I follow Adam's viewpoint in the fact that basically if you're on there for longer than 3 or 4 hours a day, I think it's freak territory. But
I think it's the new world order.
Technologically, I think it's absolutely a fantastic achievement.
Yes, yeah.
I really do.
Absolutely.
And I really ought to go and take a look at it, but I think if you're spending too much time there, what's wrong with your real life?
Yeah, fix your real life.
Why?
Because you should.
The point is, you're fixing your real life so you can have fun in it and interact with new people in it and earn money in it or whatever. If you can do that in Second Life more easily, why not do it in Second Life? Why is it important to do it in the real world?
It's just, it's so wrong. Wrong things about
its feet.
It's
just not wrong.
I think at the moment it's a lot of freak. But give it the technology is so good that give it a bit of time for people to sort out exactly what the point is and exactly what they want to do in there. It will become less freakish over time. I think.
Not everything in the world should be about technology. It should be about real social human interaction.
Yeah, but the internet itself started off with
on a physical level with
people. Why?
Because we're fucking human.
Then throw away your mobile phone.
I'm not talking. Yeah, that is
the internet.
I've got a question for you. Sorry to head off. Right, if Second Life came out with a headband tomorrow, which plugged into your head and made everything in Second Life real in your mind. Would you get it? Would you go in there with the headband on?
Yes, upon the fact that I have to go to work.
Yes. You wouldn't be worried about the fact that somebody else's programming is controlling your brain.
Well, I'm assuming it's not controlling my brain, and the same way that looking at a screen isn't controlling my brain. It's all very Snow Crash at this point.
This week on El Bizarro's Diamondique Freak Show.
No!
Stuart Langridge!
We've had an email requesting a Finger of God segment from...
We have
Chris Fletcher.
We asked you to send them in, and this chap sent them in. So
what does Chris say?
So, he says, what is the best distro?
Oh.
So, someone wants to take Person A?
I'll take person A.
Right, you're slackware. Person B.
Okay, I'll be person B.
You're slackware. Person C?
Slackware.
I'm guessing. I see where this is going.
And I think I'll take slackware, given the choice.
He's given us four choices and they're all slackware.
So,
should we let the finger decide?
Okay, let the finger decide.
Okay. Okay, ready?
Go.
Go.
prepare yourselves.
I'm scared a bit.
No.
And
it appears to have not made a decision.
Well, Slackware must be bollocks. Thanks very much.
Thank you very much, Chris.
Chris Fletcher, send in your request for the Finger of God. In the Linux format, Christmas edition magazine in the UK, and I believe it's sold internationally.
It's a very, very high quality magazine.
It is very, very high quality magazine that Jonathan Bacon used to write for. They did a roundup of Linux podcasts, six Linux podcasts, and I ought to point out, we were the best by miles. So, so gentlemen, Bridge to Engine Room, Smug Factor 9. Take it away. We were the best. Thank you very much.
We are the best. We're the best. The best. Better than all the rest. The best. The best.
Would you like a quote?
Yes, please tell us a quote. On the whole, Lug Radio was very easy to listen to, and while there were some occasional times the conversation steered away from open source.
Oops, us? Surely not.
On the whole, they kept a very tight ship. Added to this is the fact that we felt that we got a well-rounded discussion on each topic.
Were they really listening
to the radio when they wrote this?
They were, and thank you very much for that. Yeah.
I have to point out that one of the metrics they were using to measure what was the best podcast was the fact that how on topic the discussion stayed. And I think they must have fucking pulled one out of the hat there with which episode of ours they chose. Because
I hate to use these words, but in our defence, we have tried harder with season 5 to stay on topic, and we hope that it's been appreciated by the listeners.
Yeah, I mean, they didn't listen to...
They just found different things to moan about.
they didn't listen to the last episode, the one with the distro test, and it was the one before that, with the Greg Carr Hartman interview.
So the only thing that got a kick in was me, so other Linux magazines are available.
Fair play. Okay, it's the email segment.
It is indeed.
To start off with, we've got quite a few to rattle through here, so we're going to do it kind of quickly. But
it ought to be pointed out that the reason for that is that you've all sent us brilliant emails this time. Thank you very much. Keep it up.
One of the best chunks of email that we've had.
Show at lugradio.org. Keep sending us emails.
Yes.
Okay, so as we just said, the first thing we're going to do is clean up the brown note. Like, at least maybe, three or four people have emailed us to tell us what the brown note is. So,
we should reference the fact that was it the last show?
Yep. Someone emailed us about the brown note.
It was on Joel McLaughlin, was it?
Yeah, I don't know who it was. We didn't know what the brown note was, so we've had clarification, shall we say. a mix of intellectual and amusing.
Okay, so I'll start. As I said, we're going to read out a couple, so we're just pulling bits out of each one. First one's from James Daly. The brown note is the resonance when the body gives up and the anus is relaxed. Play this tone and everyone on the battlefield cacks themselves. And Joel McLaughlin also writes in his email entitled "You Stupid Bastards."
Thanks, John. We love you too.
And he gives us a link, en.wikipedia.org/wiki/brown_note. Apparently safe for work as well. The brown note is the supposed frequency that when the human hears it, he shits himself. And if you don't believe me, see the South Park episode Worldwide Recorder Concert.
South Park, that well-known documentary.
We've also had an email from Brian Riley. Yeah, Riley.
And he, no he, way.
Yeah, way. He says, but the show, but the TV show Mythbusters did a highly scientific test. A guy stood in front of a big set of speakers wearing an adult nappy while a range of notes was played at him and found out that the only shit involved was of the bull variety. So brown note is sufficiently debunked. Thanks for everybody's feedback there. Yep. So
wisdom. There's a chap here called Gary Adamson who's written in to tell us about ICECE, which is an in-car MP3 player. He says, I guess his owner needs to get laid, who has way too much time on his hand. This is a guy who's got a Sun Enterprise 4500, yes, huge, great big server in the back of his car to play MP3s. But he then goes on to say, how about a Lug Radio lottery for all the fans? All you do is get the fans to guess the number of times that Jono says community, and the person that gets it right gets sent a free t-shirt. I would say that's a brilliant idea, but you can look at the Jono Bacon community-ometer, which is still on my site and still counting the number of times Jono says community. The graph gets updated every day. It's excellent.
I'm pleased.
So thank you, Gary Adamson. Jono says community. The picture just cracks me up every time I look at it.
Laughing at your own jokes, Langley.
Yes. I
laugh too, to be honest.
Go Bacon with an email.
Sorry. Go Bacon. It's like bacon, but freer. Okay, Chris Hayes, that's CBH World on the forums.
Heir to the modem fortune.
The what?
Heir to the modem fortune.
That's pretty...
I remember. All
right. You remember that joke at least. Right,
I thought you'd already learned your lesson when it came to telling jokes, Chris.
Oh, shut up.
No, a national magazine has referenced it.
Ba-dum-bum-ba-dum.
Okay, I'm going home.
Moving Go on, read your email.
So, he says, Dear Lug Radio, spelt incorrectly. I was wondering...
He spelled Lug Radio wrong.
He's doing it the old way with the capital letters.
Ah, no, that's wrong.
Oh, okay. I'll stop doing
capital
that.
Capital L, lowercase u, lowercase g, capital R, adio.
There we go. He says, I was wondering whether you might be interested in mentioning this on the show sometime. Well, we are. The company that I'm working at, 4Linux, celebrated the recently passed Software Freedom Day 2007 in a rather cool way. They created a competition to give the schools in Nottinghamshire, Lincolnshire and Leicestershire, that's not Leicestershire to our American friends, an opportunity to receive a year's worth of technical support for free and open source software. I imagine that taking the leap into using free software is the kind of jump that could appear too risky for most schools, getting away from the tried and trusted proprietary software, and they have grown to become comfortable over the years. And this is why an offer like this strikes me as being extremely useful. Allowing a school to try this without having to worry about the nitty-gritty side of it seems like a really great contribution that an open source solutions company can give back to the local community. Personally...
Ding, ding, ding.
He said it, not me. Well, I did say it, but...
Ding, ding, shut ding, up.
Ding, 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 ding.
Community! Personally, I...
You expect my community!
Personally, I'd really love to see more of this kind of thing. Anyhow, it'd be great to hear what you guys think about this. P.S. Thanks to me meeting Matt Lee at Lug Radio 2007, there's now a picture of you drawing an Inkscape by yours truly on the GNU website, as well as a digital rights picture. Did you see that?
I did see it.
And
I'm caught in between thinking, wow, he's a very good artist, and there's a really piss-take caricature picture of me in cartoon form. I'm not sure about that. It's a brilliant picture.
Gallery of Zealots.
He's the chap who painted the picture of the Chinny raccoon that we gave away at Lug Radio Live.
Unbelievable raccoon of godly fame.
Christoph.
Not sure I should read anything now. I'm
sitting
in the corner and sulk.
We were kidding. Chris is a very funny individual.
Anyway, I'll read somebody else's.
He just forgot to bring funny on that particular episode.
Ooh. I'm going to stick to reading other people's material.
Let's read his email.
You came out with a comic gag at the end of that segment that we were talking. That was very funny. Don't feel so bad.
Right, anyway.
You're fucking helping, aren't you? Sorry, Chris. Now proceed. I'm sticking up for you here. Proceed.
Right, are we? Shall I move on now?
All right, so I won't help next time.
He was doing symbols behind your back, by the way.
Come on.
We've had an email from Manon Fallon, who's Ken Fallon's wife.
Madame Fallon.
Manon.
Oh, right.
I'm assuming that's pronounced
Manon Fallon.
.com.
/ get involved.
Oh, dear.
Sorry.
Fucking
she
Bill
says...
and Ted punched the air over here.
I'm going to take this opportunity to let you know that I'm absolutely gutted that my husband got his N800. Earlier this year, he wanted to skip the christening of our daughter to go to Lug Radio Live. Then he won this Nokia N800, and he wouldn't stop talking about it. So when he got it, I thought that would be it, and I wouldn't have to listen to him talking about it anymore. But no, now he doesn't go anywhere without it. He's watching it, Star Trek mostly, when feeding the baby, listening to it when he's tidying up, messing with it whenever he has a chance. The other night, I woke up to a mysterious bluish glow. Ken couldn't sleep and was looking at, Yes, of course, the N800. What else? Well, you get the picture. I just wanted to say thanks a lot.
Wow.
Well, just be grateful that we were only 6 months late in sending it. Then, well, otherwise, he'd still be doing it now, yes, and then you'd have 6 months of it.
Ken Fallon, winner of the Get High with Linux competition, won an 800, and now his wife wishes he hadn't.
I found a video the other day from Neuro on YouTube of his entry for Get High with Linux.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Yeah. Cool. Did we actually look at that?
We did. We disallowed it because he was on a plane and we said it was too easy then.
That's right.
Okay, right.
He was well pissed off about that.
I got something of an issue to clear up here.
This is where Adam grovels pathetically.
Yeah, almost immediately as the episode was released, the last episode, the screaming began with a British accent from just the other side of the Appalachian Mountains as Adam Williamson proceeded to pull his head off and then throw it at us through every media available. I made a bit of a fuck up last time because I'm the guy that went and got all the distros, and Adam Williamson of Mantriva correctly pointed out in every media available that I got the wrong one. I got the free edition of Mantriva and not Mantriva 1, and Mantriva free edition is the one that doesn't contain any proprietary software, which is why the wireless didn't work and why I didn't have any non-free Nvidia drivers to start with. And so, Adam, as you could probably guess, this is my way of apologising. and to everybody listening, please remember that Mandriva is an excellent distribution. Well, seriously, though, I am quite sorry about that. I didn't want the CD edition with KDE. I wanted the desktop agnostic one, which had both on. And it seems there's only the only version that had both on was the DVD. And there's only a DVD of Mandriva 3. So sorry about that. That's how I made the mistake. But I have downloaded the GNOME Mantriva 1 CD, so I'll give it a blast soon.
So, sufficient grovelling from the suite. Can I read out an email that's related to that? It's to do with Mandriva. This comes from my friend and yours, Will Thompson, who is our friend Reziak. Reziak says, Mandrivers and fridge hentai. You spent 15 minutes sticking the glorious Lug Radio steel toe-capped boot into Adam Williamson's Anglo-Franco-Canuck derriere for various actually on-topic reasons, and never once mocked the distro's name for sounding like bad porn. I'm shocked and disgusted and would like to cancel my subscription. Also, you mentioned the Mandriva USB sticks that were given away at Guadec. Some experimentation over lunch just after they were given out found that rubbing a sugar cube against them was an effective way to remove the Mandriva logo without harming the rest of the case.
That's just harsh.
Finally, I would like to nominate all the nutjob websites Dave 2 knows about the next edition of El Bizarro's Antique Freak Show. Ask him about fridge hentai next time you see him on IRC. Dave 2 is resident fucknut in the Lug Radio community. Go to #LugRadio and speak to Dave 2, and he will tell you many and varied disgusting websites to look at.
He will do indeed. Many involving goats.
I've got a very quick one and then a longer one. Yui Shua Camp? Not quite sure how you pronounce that.
Ui!
See, does exactly what it says on the tin. Ui Shua Camp.
Uwe, I reckon his Uwe. First name is. Forget the surname.
Uwe.
What about Uwe?
Uwe Schuerkamp.
Yeah, Uwe.
Fucking knows? Uwe. What kind of stupid name is that?
It's some of that foreign muck.
No, it's fucking Yao. It's how you spell Yao.
Yao. Yao Schoenberg.
No more Schuerkamps for Yao.
Yao.
Right. Okay. Anyway, he says, I followed your discussion of Zool recently and came across WebRunner, which is apparently written in Zool and allows you to run Gmail, Gcalendar, and friends outside of the browser, which it does. It's now called Prism. And it's a way of having...
They've changed the name again.
It was only ever WebRunner, and now it's Prism.
Wasn't it ZoolRunner before that?
No, ZoolRunner's something different.
Oh, okay.
But the idea behind it is basically a single website web browser, so it brings up Gmail in a thing without the browser, Chrome and everything, yeah. And they're all separate, so if your Gmail web browser crashes, then your Google Calendar one doesn't and so on. I think it's a really good idea, and they're doing a really good job. Clinton Collins writes in and says two things. The first one is that... I assume the LUG in LUG Radio stands for Linux User Group, but we never talk about Linux User Groups, which the LUG.org.uk community have given us a kicking for in the past.
It did start as Linux User Group, but it doesn't anymore, really.
No, it's just a name now, I think, to be honest with you. But he says, second, you need to get Bill Health back on your show and give him a best tool ever award.
While you got a really nice screwdriver or something.
While you plant the boot firmly in his backside. On your show, he said, "Judge us by what we're doing today and not what we did 5 years ago. I say you should gladly accommodate his request. Here's just a few of the topics you could ask him about. Ongoing scaremongering with software patent FUD. Ridiculous Get the Facts propaganda advertised to every Linux news site. Corruption of the BBC with iPlayer and closed media formats. Perversion of the ISO standards setting process in their quest to make OOXML an ISO standard." Yep. I could keep going, but you get the idea. Bill Hilf is simply a Microsoft tool. I absolutely see your point, apart from the fact there's no point in getting Bill Hilf on because he's no longer head of Microsoft's open source lab. He's now head of Microsoft's Destroy the Competitors lab or something.
I think he's moving to Windows Marketing, hasn't he? And now the head of the lab is Sam Ramji, I think.
Is he the Gen 2 guy? As was.
Sam Ramji?
Yeah.
I don't think so.
Oh, okay. Anyway.
not kind of chugging along on too many facts here right now. I'm not even entirely sure that Bill... I think Bilf is still involved in the open source lab. He's just got a co-role as, you know, head of Windows Marketing.
Obviously two perfectly compatible roles there, in
opinion. We should get Bilf and Ramji on the show.
Oh, we should do.
We could do with an update from Bilf.
Okay.
Cool. I've had a very short email from a guy known only as Mike, who says, "Adam Sweet, stop saying
Speaking into your microphone, young fella.
Sorry.
Adam Sweet, stop saying all the bloody time. And Chris Proctor, please, please, please try not to sound like Shrek on sedatives. I've no idea what Shrek sounds like, but obviously really sexy. So
now that's Adam.
Yeah.
That there, ladies and gentlemen, is the brown note.
I don't know. I do say a lot, so I'm not going to take too much criticism from that.
I think, to be fair, and I'm being serious here, I'm not for serious all that often, I think you guys are doing a fantastic job. You know, Ravel and...
Thank you.
Not you.
No, you're doing rubbish. Oh. But
I think, you know, Ravel and the Bald Man have their own style, their own approach to Lug Radio, and you guys have sat in their seats very well. And yeah, it's good. It's unusual not setting the mic stand up sort of 3 feet above the floor for Ravel. But yeah. I think credit where credit's due.
I would agree. We're very pleased that the team changed the way it did.
Yeah,
cool.
Absolutely.
Well done, you YouTube chaps.
I've got two emails I'm going to blast through very quickly. I'm just going to pick a bit out of each one. One titled... is that his name? Allegedly from Odysseus Flappington.
What? That seems implausible to me, to be honest with you.
Mr. Flappington?
in episode 3, season 5, someone mentioned about buying printers from some place called Crime Something. That was Crime Converters. And he wants to know, what's the actual name of the organisation?
It's Crime Converters.
It's Cash Converters. It's cash a place converters. Where criminals of the world take their goods to be sold. It's basically full of nicked stuff.
Allegedly.
What it actually is a pawn shop. P-A-W-N, not P-O-R-N, for God's sake. It's a pawn shop.
I'm just going to whiz through this one from Mike Sheldon, which is Elio to many of us, about the Enlightenment DR17 PCs. Just thought you'd like to know, I point you to the EverX TC2502G PC being sold for $200 at Walmart in the States, running GOS, which is an Ubuntu 7.10 using Enlightenment, blah, 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 blah. It's 1.5 gigahertz via Mini ITX. However, they've actually put it in a normal size desktop case because their customers are worried about the size. So blah, 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 blah. Sorry, I'm going to skip through a bit. We've actually seen tonight that they've already sold out, haven't we?
Have they?
Yep. Yes. Yep. They've sold out.
Walmart have sold out. Geos is interesting. It ships with applications, but a lot of it's oriented around you using online applications. So the default mail client on there is Gmail. Click the mail icon, get Gmail in a browser window.
Incidentally, on a related note, did you guys see the fact that Tesco announced that?
Yes, that's what I was going to say.
Yes.
Yeah. And yeah, we had no idea about it.
About 180, 190
Actually, no,
quid.
I think someone at Canonical was talking to them, but it was news to me anyway.
On the Tesco website in the UK. Tesco's a supermarket in the UK.
Biggest supermarket in the UK, I think.
Yes. Yes, it is.
Yep. Yeah.
That was it.
And
I
they're
think.
Frickin' cheap machines as well.
They're like 190
they
quid,
are,
I think.
Absolutely.
Are we done?
One other brief thing I'd like to say. We said last time that we would like people to email us and tell us about their projects so we could talk about it. And quite a few people have done that, and that's great. Thank you. Keep it up. We're trying to build up a list of people we want to talk to and try and organise interviews and so on and so forth. So if we haven't contacted you yet, that doesn't mean we're not going to. So, thank you. Keep telling us about your projects, your company, your community, the things that you're doing and things that you'd like to talk about on the show.
Cool. Just before we finish up, I'd like to throw a last one in. It's very short. It's from Michael McLean, who says, in response to our Otherkin segment, I discovered a Wikipedia article for the Otherkin describes Otakukin, who reckon that they are reincarnated anime characters, and I think that says it all.
That pretty much says everything.
Okay, and the last thing, we said that the best email would get a Lug Radio t-shirt, and that is indeed the truth.
Yes, now I suggest because we haven't actually talked about this before now.
No, so everyone pick an email which you think was your best email, and
we'll let the finger decide. Right, okay, I'm going to pick Reziak. Reziak's email, which was talking about scraping the logo off the Mandriva stick, USB stick, I thought was particularly amusing. So Reziak is my choice.
I'm going to pick one of the brown note ones. in a moment.
Just take your time, there's no rush.
Well, personally, I'm going to go for Mrs. Fallon, because I don't think that household has enough freebies from us yet.
That was an excellent email.
And I'm going to pick Gary Adamson, because he sticks the boat into Jono about saying community, and I think there should be more of that.
Thank you once again.
Okay, I'm going to pick Joel McLaughlin, entitled "You Stupid Bastards." Thanks for that.
Thank you for that. Yes,
I'm going to edge towards the finger.
Prepare the finger.
Excuse me, I'm just moving across.
All right, stick the...
I can't reach. Turn it off.
Small technical hitch there.
Just bear with us, listeners.
It's only on two people. That's right.
I think we came prematurely there.
Right, okay.
technical issues here, listeners.
Hey, it's gone back.
All right, let's go.
It used to be setting itself back to two people rather than four.
Okay, don't be me. Don't be me.
Gary Adamson's going, go on.
Don't be Reziak.
Gary Adamson, I hope it's not you.
Come on.
Shit,
so... That was Adam, so who wins?
That was Joel McLaughlin.
Joel McLaughlin, so... Send us your address and we'll send you a Lug Radio t-shirt.
I love the fact that Adam actually knocked his mic stand over.
Well, the thing is, all the hassle before reaching across, I actually across my microphone like this, so I couldn't do anything.
Okay, so that's us for another series. No, that's us for another episode.
Yep, did you ask him to send your address?
Yes.
Good. Letter emails to show@lugradio.org as usual.
Yep, best email receives a Lug Radio t-shirt.
We should note at this point, the t-shirts haven't been produced yet. They're in the queue. So you're in a queue to get a t-shirt. It might be a while before you get it. If you want advice on waiting, speak to Ken Fowler.
Yep. The other thing you should do is go to the Lug Radio forums, forums.lugradio.org. We've had quite a lot of interesting discussion there over the last couple of weeks.
Been some really good stuff there. And I believe that the Clan Gaming is still going on, so go to clan.lugradio.org. And good stuff.
I think that they announce that kind of thing when they're going to do a game on the forums now. Yeah.
There have been a couple of big ones recently.
End of the show, and another show in the can.
Yes.
So, good show, I think.
Yep. Thank you very much to Havoc and Colin for talking about Gnome Online Desktop.
Indeed.
Thank you to the Second Life people for all being a bit strange.
Sorry, I had something to talk about.
And importantly, thanks for the fantastic emails. We were really pleased with the emails, and we had a tough time trying to decide which ones to read out. So
we read them all.
And finally...
Oh, we didn't read them all,
no,
definitely.
No, there was a lot more.
And finally, we read them all to decide if we're going to read them.
Oh, well, yeah,
can you not do the Wallace and Gromit thing with your chin when you say that?
it's either Wallace and Gromit or Blakey from On the Busters.
Finally what?
And finally, thanks to Linux Format for recognising our contributions to the open source space for so long. Thank you very much. I'd like to thank the Academy.
Quite seriously, nice one. We think you made the right decision. Good one.
Yeah, so all good. So we'll see you folks again in 2 weeks.
See you in 2 weeks.
Goodbye.
Bye-bye.
Bye.